Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Brazilian girls and good time, and welcome to the Topically Yours show on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul. And as always, I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler, and on each show we hope to bring you topics of importance and subjects of interest. During the show, we're going to talk to filmmaker Al Grease and a panel of black professionals consisting of Blake Radio's own sports denizen, Doc Stanley, vocalist and jazz extraordinaire Jan Parker, Prudential Douglas Element VP and associate broker Sharon Harris, and educator Sharif Bailey, who is in the process of writing a book on his experiences in Brazil entitled Rio in Retrospective, An American Story. Mr. Grease is a New York native by birth. He has had a penchant for family and a desire to uplift his community, and therefore, through his film, Frustrated, he has sought to get another side to the article written by William Jelani Cobb, a professor of history at Spelman College in Atlanta, who wrote the controversial article, Blame It on Rio. And he wrote that for Essence magazine in 2006, where he stirred up a hornet's nest by suggesting in his article that African-American men were deserting African-American women in droves by moving to and vacationing in Brazil, where they sought out compliant Brazilian women prostitutes for sex. On today's show, our panel will discuss this and the article's validity. Do African-American women turn off their men? If so, how? What do African-American women want from their men? Do they feel abandoned by black men? Is money and education the main reason black relationships break up? Do some women self-sabotage? Do men want submissive women? Any suggestions? Well, we're going to discuss these issues and more. And I invite our panel to discuss them and also the audience by calling in at 914-338-0695. So why don't we start the show with Mr. Grease, who is with us. I know you've traveled to Mexico, Brazil, and the Virgin Islands and lived within the American state of Alaska. But do you hold the opinion that African Americans in general do not travel enough outside America so they can get the full scope of life in other countries? Thereby, we oftentimes just rely on the media to tell us what's going on.
I do. I think from my circles, the young men that I deal with in my circles don't travel enough, and they look at me in amazement when I tell them that I travel to Brazil and other countries in South America, and they usually get their news from publications like Essence Magazine or Jet or what other publications. They usually get their information from there, and they don't travel. They don't get a chance to experience other cultures and what other cultures have to offer. So they usually travel within the states, Miami, for spring break, because Miami's a big place, in California, or maybe Vegas, and that's the scope of it. They don't go outside their comfort zone.
Yes, that's oftentimes the problem. But your film, well, I find the title rather interesting. Why did you entitle it Frustrated?
Doing the research and doing some investigation and the interviews, that was the tone I was getting from the men and from the women also. I interviewed American women in the film, and that seemed to be the tone. You know, and some of the questions I was asking, they were getting excited, and a lot of them, they were just frustrated. And that's how I came up with the title from doing the interview process.
Well, I mentioned Professor Cobb's article, Blame It on Rio, at the top of the show. What are your thoughts about his article?
The article was biased. It was biased, and for lack of a better word, it was just trash. And I was disappointed because I expected something more from Professor Cobb. He's an educator, and he's educating black women. So I thought he would add more substance to the article. I'm not sure if you're aware of the article, but he stated stuff like men travel there because they couldn't get women in the States unless you play for the Lakers or unless you're a big hip-hop artist or Pharrell produced your latest single. And I thought the issues were greater than that, and I was disappointed in him for writing something like that. So that's when I decided to take on this project, and after traveling to Brazil and wanting to share some of the experiences that I just had with some of my close friends and buddies, their wives and girlfriends and significant others, didn't want them really talking to me and labeled me as this sex addict or sex predator type. And I didn't know where that was coming from until I was introduced to the article. And after reading the article, I was really disgusted with the article. And that's what made me take on the project.
I understand. Well, what prompted you? I mean, you went there to Brazil to get the accuracy of the article, or you just went there because...
I went... My nephew graduated from college, and me and my older brother, I'm the youngest out of seven, so me and my nephew are a little bit close in age, and we decided to do something special for him, and we took him on a trip. Neither of us never been to Brazil, and we took him to Brazil, and we had a great time. We had a great time. The culture of Brazil, the food, and the women and the people and the arts there, and we had a fantastic time. That's what sparked us to go to reward my nephew from graduating from college. So after going and coming back and wanting to share the experience, that's when I was introduced to the Essence article. And I was just really disappointed in Essence and also Professor Cobb.
Well, tell me about Brazil. I mean, you went there. I know the makeup of the confluence of people of several origins, Indian, black, African slaves, Europeans, Arabs, Japanese, Koreans, Chinese, Paraguayans, and Bolivians. And who would you say is the dominant race there?
Well, it depends on what region you travel within Brazil. Brazil has the largest population, of course, of Africans outside of Africa, and they also have the largest population of Japanese outside of Japan. If you're in the Rio de Janeiro, if you're over in that area, there tends to be a lot of Europeans over there. That's more the upscale area, most of the Europeans. If you go down to the south a little bit, and Fortaleza, it's more the Indians and blacks over in that sector. And if you go up to Bahia, it changes a little bit. So it all depends on what part of the area of Brazil you're in. But Rio tends to be more the tourist section there, so it's a little mixture. It's a mixture there. But it's mostly Europeans you see there.
Oh, okay. And someone mentioned to me that the it's changed economically. It's number 9 or something now as it competes in the world.
In the next 20 years, it's projected to be number 5, the fifth largest economy in the world. And what I found amazing over there is that they're preparing for that. And one of the ways that they're preparing for that is actually giving money to the poor to go back to school to get educated on the economic boom that's coming that way. They just elected a female president, and they want to make sure that the native people there get full advantage of the economic boom that's coming there and not have the Europeans and Americans and everybody else come in and kind of rape the land. So they're really focusing now on the people in Brazil and making sure the poor get educated and get back to school, and they actually giving them money. You go to the bank, open up a bank account, and as long as you're in school, you would get sort of like an allotment in your bank account to help you with your education. And I think that's wonderful.
Yes, it is. It definitely is. I would also like to ask the ladies on the panel, because I have with me, as I mentioned earlier, Jan Parker and Sharon Harris. Are you there, ladies?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, based on the article, as I said, that most of the people that read the article have not even been to Brazil, and so they formed their opinions about Brazil based on that. So what, having known about the article or heard about the article, what is your opinions about African-American men going to Brazil to meet women?
This is Sharon Harris speaking, and my son has been there, and my stepson have been to Brazil, and they're young men, and they said that the women are very beautiful, and but they did talk about the prostitution there. When it comes to, I wanted to address something about what Al said about blacks not traveling, and that is true. That is true. And a lot of that, I guess, comes from our parents, Jim Crow. They didn't go anywhere, and a lot of black people are not financially able to travel as freely because we're still on the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to the economics of America. And as we know, we are the first to be fired, and they're in this bad economy that we're in. The rate of blacks not working is like 2 or 3 times higher than that of whites. So we still have a lot to go through. But what I wanted to mention is that I was looking at Dr. Henry Gates. He had a show on PBS called mm-hmm. Africans in America mm-hmm. and what has happened to them. So Brazil was one of the last countries to free the slaves in 1888. They were the last to abolish. And if they're spending so much money on educating the people, and I will guarantee you it's the black people, the racism there is rampant, much worse than here. They're less educated. So if there is a problem, there is cultural differences. They do not have the education that we have, and they cannot get the type of jobs that we can get here in America. So I believe that sometime they're still, they haven't, when they abolished slavery there, the transition was not great or fought for like it was here. The TV shows, ads, magazines, there's white, white, white. And usually blacks there can only get jobs in manufacturing or working in hotels or things like that. So the comparisons are different. So, of course, women, men are going there. They're not on the same education. I hate to say this, but they're not the same education level that we are here in America. And so that's really all I wanted to say right now.
Well, what do you say about that, Mr. Grease?
I agree with that. I mean, she's right on that. The education level there it's a huge gap if you're comparing it to America to Brazil. But what I will say is that the culture of Brazil tends to be more collective. I guess since they don't have a lot, and they tend to pull the resources together, especially within the family, and they kind of form together. So they have more of a collective unit. Family is more important to them than I think it is over here. And they have more respect for man. Man is the head of the family. So there's a great respect for men over there in Brazil. So a lot of times, not just in the immediate family, but in your extended family, they all pull together. They pull the resources together. They pull together. And I can remember, like I said, I'm the youngest out of seven kids. And I remember growing up in New York, we were more in tune with our neighbors. If you needed something, you can go to your neighbor's house and knock on the door and get something. When we had less, we were more together. Now that we have more, we seem to be breaking apart. The family unit is not as strong here, and we tend to break apart more. And nowadays, we don't even know who our neighbors are and really don't care. We're not in our communities. So that's a huge difference compared to over here and there. And I will say this, in the favelas, there, you know, that's usually the drug lord of that favela handles all personal matters in there. They keep the police out of their personal business, out of family business. So if you have issues with maybe your husband is, let's say, abusive towards you and your family can't handle it, the local drug lord will come in and he'll handle it. He'll handle it for you. So the community is.
How does he handle it?
I didn't get.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if it's a problem, you can't handle it, and he has to handle it. He takes care of it, you know, I mean, within the community. Within that community, they take care of it.
Well, back in America, I would like to ask the ladies how they feel about it here.
They are culturally lagging behind us in every aspect due to lack of education. One of the things that black men, not just everyone has said that, black women, we're more, I think we register for college more so than black men.
Yes.
A lot of black men are in jail, as we know. This is the thing that people talk about all the time, you know. So black women, I'm in real estate. Black women are the ones that's buying properties because they have better credit. Black men do not. Most black men do not have good credit. I don't know why or where all this comes from, but when it comes to a black woman wanting a man, finances is one of the big things that will break up a relationship. And that's the main thing that would break up a relationship. And the men, they're not getting it together. There was a study, I forgot where I saw it, where they're playing games on the TV, iPod and all that stuff, instead of getting off the couch. Where women are more apt to do things, and the sad fact is that we are the ones that's been holding the family together. It's racism, and I don't know what's happening. It wasn't like that, say 40 years ago. Black people were getting married to each other, and I don't know what happened during the revolution. with the civil rights, but seemed like women became empowered. But the black men dropped off. So it was like yin and yang.
Well, what are your thoughts on that, Jan?
I am just feeling, oh, hello, everybody.
Hi, Jan.
I am just feeling from my perspective, and that's being a musician, that I am so exposed to musicians, and we are traveling all the time. So I've never been to Brazil, but many of the guys that I've worked with have. And most of them have had wonderful things to say about the physical beauty of the women there, but they are not really saying anything otherwise. I do have, excuse me, a few peers that are just, you know, going to Brazil for vacation, and they seem to enjoy it and continue to go. But I don't have a point of view in connection with this because I haven't been. But I do know here on this end, we are constantly being accused of being assertive and, well, not so much assertive as aggressive and confrontational. And that might be because most of us came up in households where there were women who were head of that household, and we had to, you know, kind of grab the reins and understand that this was going to be our role to become head of household. So I don't know if that has anything to do with any of this, but I think,
of course,
to some extent that it does. But, you know,
because apparently it's the reason they say they're leaving, or the article is saying that a lot of African American men are leaving because they can't get along with their women. And so we want to know, why is that? Because, as you just stated, the woman has been loyal and been there for them.
Doc Stanley here. First of all, praise and honor to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. You know, once again, you can't believe everything you read. Now, Charisse had a tremendous stat. You know, only 7% of Americans have passports. Only 4% use them. Okay, so, and going to Brazil, now, she talked about the guys in the band. Okay, these are guys who probably went to areas that, as we call, gringo areas, tourist traps. But, no, did they get, and okay, to me, a person that's been blessed to travel to Thailand and Venezuela and Germany and Dominican Republic, France, Italy, Brazilian was the most beautiful woman in the world. On the other hand, you know, what I'm saying here, the mindset is that you're just talking about these girls' beauty and their body. And you get a person that's in a band, okay, he's going to go, he's going to go down to the red light district. You know, he's not going to go into the neighborhood. He's not going to see this cultural structure of the people. Dejo Cotamacio Jr., the international promoter, when I first went to Brazil, once again, blessed by the master, I went with the legendary Gloria Gaynor. Her husband and I were close friends, Linwood Maxwell Simon. As a rookie police officer, the man befriended me. And when I retired, he said, Stanley, come on and work with me. I got the opportunity to go to São Paulo, Porto Alegre, Fortaleza, Manaus, Goiânia, Belém, and Brasília. São Paulo, as the doctor spoke earlier, that's the area that has the highest populace of people of mm-hmm. Japanese descent because they came over after the bombing. But, you know, until you can get go into the neighborhood, the great thing that Mr. Camacho also always said about his country, Stanley, my people are poor, but they're happy. Okay, and we have to understand in Brazil, if I'm correct, was the last country to abolish slavery. In fact, I in Fortaleza, I went to the town which was the first redemption, I may be pronouncing it wrong, was the first city in Brazil to abolish slavery. It became historic for me. But like I said, the mind, I mean, it's funny, you know, because Thailand has to say, you know, you say prostitution is legal all over the world except here. Vegas is legal. So, I mean, these girls or working in a venue that sometimes is an avenue out. Some see it, as my friend Mr. Camacho says, some have the virus, some don't. But when we talk about Brazilian prostitutes, well, there are prostitutes in Holland, there are prostitutes in Germany. So, I mean, so they're just not the only girls that are prostitutes. But understand, the culture of the people, the thing Mr. Simon had told me, he said, Stanley, you're going to like Brazil. And he didn't say I was going to like Brazil because of the women. I would like Brazil because he knew my personality and he knew the personality of the people. I met a gentleman there my first trip, saxophone player in Ms. Gaynor's band. We call him Chiquino. It was Edison Alameda. We bonded so well, the man made me the best man at his wedding. You know, so I got some friendships. I learned the culture of the people. I learned, as Mr. Steve Glazer told me, Stanley, you know, I'm a permanent resident now. I plan to move to Brazil in a couple of years. And a lot of reasons is financially my money can work a lot better for me. But the thing, too, is the people. I mean, as the doctor spoke, you know, the man is the household, but they have a unison. And I found the same thing in Thailand with the girls. You know, if you get two or three girls who are working kind of study, they look out for the girls that are not working. You know, they come in pairs. You know, they're always looking out for their friend. But this mindset that black men are flocking, the horde of men that are in Brazil are not African-American men. First of all, it's a 10-hour flight. P.J. Albert, outstanding photographer, told me, Doc, I can't be up in the air for 10 hours. I'm not going there for 10 hours. And I'm not. And Steve Glazer said, Doc, that's why there's a lot of Americans here. It's a 10-hour flight into São Paulo or Rio, and now if you want to go to Fortaleza, you want to go to Bahia, it's another 3 hours. That's 14 hours.
Well, let me ask you this, Doc. Mm-hmm. Is it mostly African influence there?
African influence from the terms of music, okay? Mm-hmm. You have the African music. I mean, the doctor just said, outside of Africa, highest populous people of African descent, okay? The people are very influenced from an African standpoint of view, but we're talking about music-wise. There'd be a lot of voodoo in, you know, certain areas. Bahia, if I'm correct, is the Virginia of Brazil. That's where.
Well, I ask you that because I want to segue into a commercial, and you know how that is.
Go ahead.
You know, I had the opportunity to interview the great Ray Barreto before his death, and he talked about how Africa influenced music of the Latin, much of the Latin music. And another great Latin artist, Cuban-born, 9-time Grammy Award-winning saxophonist, clarinetist, and composer Paquito de Rivera will be appearing tonight at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts, and which is the Performing Arts Center is continuing its 31st season, and with a not-to-be-missed evening of incredible Latin music. Paquito de Rivera won honors in both Latin jazz and classical categories and is a true master of Afro-Cuban, Latin jazz, and bebop. He will appear in concert with the great Mambo Legends Orchestra, comprised of former members of the Tito Puente Orchestra. And Lehman Center for the Performing Arts is located at 250 Bedford Park Boulevard in the Bronx. And tickets for the show can be purchased by calling the Lehman Center box office at 718-960-8833 or online at www.lehmancenter.org. And those that want to travel there can do so by the number 4, the D train, Bedford Park Boulevard, or by car by Sawmill River Parkway and the Major Deacon Expressway. Parking is $5. And again, if you want to have tickets, you can call 718-960-8833. Well, we're back. And we're talking to the panel. We're interviewing Al Grease, the filmmaker of Frustrated. And as I said, on our panel is Doc Stanley, whom you just heard, and Jan Parker, Sharon Harris,
well, Sharon
and Sharice
Harris
Bailey.
Sharon Harris wants to jump in there. When it was just mentioned about prostitution in other places, prostitution has been around since the earth began, since God created woman. But we're only talking about Brazil right now. We know it's everywhere. But this whole conversation is about Brazil and why black men, black American men, want to go there. I had mentioned that my son went there. His stepbrother was he bought property in Brazil. So they went there for business, but my son, of course, is not going to tell me everything that they were doing. He just said that the women were beautiful and that he said it didn't cost much. He said they were soliciting, but I don't know where or what section. I've never been there myself, but just things that I have read, and I thought that Louis Gates' documentary on Brazil was very insightful. I think he did a great job because, as you know, he's a historian, and he traveled there. I sent it. Matter of fact, I just sent it to Deidre so she could see what I was looking at. And what they documented was about the racism and about how it's more blacks in Brazil outside of Africa than any place else. And but their living conditions, that's what I said, culturally, the slave trade was much different than here. From what they said on during the documentary is that we were treated better, we had better housing, can you believe that, than what they gave them in Brazil, because they could travel to Brazil faster. If a slave died, they could just go get another one in Africa. It was easier to travel the route. So and things, from what I understand, are still pretty bad there. You don't see them on TV. You don't see them in magazines. They have not. They're not where we are. We do have a black president. So Brazil culturally, when it comes to blacks, is still way behind us. And when you were talking about how women treat their man, it reminded me of back in my grandma's days, where women just catered and did what they were supposed to, even though they hated it because they couldn't go anywhere. A man could beat them. You saw what's that movie with Oprah Winfrey and Whoopi Goldberg? You know,
Color Purple.
Yes, those things really happened. Mm-hmm. And it had nothing to do with color either, because I know white women have said those things happen in for them also. So
do you feel that African American women are forced into a role, and they actually?
Yes,
because
the men aren't stepping up. We want a man. We want a king, I would love to cater to a man. You know, if he was doing the right thing, you know, it's like if I can step up, you can step up. Don't
maybe you
can. I jump in for 1 second?
Yeah, I want to. Is this Cherise?
No, this is Al Grease, a filmmaker.
Okay, because I want to also have Cherise talk. He's the only one that hasn't said anything yet.
I just want to say one quick thing there. When you're speaking on the Brazil being behind and culture compared to the United States,
okay,
and in my opinion,
I'm talking
America,
about black culture, not
black
not
culture.
White.
In my opinion, America is a culture of no culture. Mm. The only thing that brings us all together is money and war. That's it. And when you go to when you travel to Brazil, they're more collectively together than we are here. We're separate, and one of the biggest issues that we're having in relationships is the money issue. In education, women are being educated at a higher rate than men are here. So, of course, they're in the marketplace, they're making more money. And that's what seems to be, that's all that's important to women is money. I interviewed some firefighters that were out vacationing in Brazil. They were all together. They were out there, and they're in the documentary. And they gave their point that, you know, when they're back home, firefighters are not good enough anymore. Police officers are not good enough for women anymore. They have a certain standard, certain lifestyle they want to have, and if you don't meet that, they don't want anything to do with you. So it doesn't matter what kind of character you have, what kind of individual you are, how much money can you bring to the table, what kind of degree do you have. And if you don't meet that criteria, we don't have anything to talk about. And one just quick point, there's prostitution over in Brazil. I don't know any man that would travel 10 hours on a flight, spend $2,000 to $3,000 to go over there for prostitution. You don't have to travel that far for prostitution.
Good point, Doc.
Absolutely.
I wanted to dovetail on what he said, and this is the fallacy. This is, as Marion Brooke, the perpetrator of fraud that we're flying all the way over there.
Doc, I want to give Sharif a chance to say something because he's been here all this time and not said a word.
Oh yeah, hey Sharif.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. I mean, you wrote your book Rio in Retrospective, an American Story, about your experiences in Brazil. So just clue us in a bit about your experiences.
Well, I wrote the book to basically document, my experience, 10-year cultural experience in Brazil, along with a number of my friends who took a maiden voyage to Brazil back in 2001. There were 9 males and 1 female, a sister, and we went there for the cultural experience side of seeing and visiting Brazil. And what we got from that experience carried through today with us with respect to the friendships that we have made there, the bonds, the ongoing relationships with some of the group members. It just so happens that both my youngest brother and I, we actually got married in Brazil a few years.
Still Brazilian?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
I have a 6-year-old son who, is bicultural, speaks fluent Portuguese, and actually teaches me Portuguese now. So when I hear the discussions about the most popular notion of why African American men go to Brazil, some of those things do exist, but you know the real meaningful kinds of experiences are the things that people need to hear more about regarding Americans in general and Brazilians, because Brazil is a wonderful country with a lot of culture, a lot of history and culture connected to Africa. There's so much more there to Brazil than what I'm hearing with respect to the whole sex discussion of black men going there just for sex. That is not even the tip of the iceberg in this whole discussion and this whole reality.
I just want to say quickly, I really didn't mean to interject that they go there just for sex. I take it for vacation, and then if that happens, it happens.
Yeah, I think that is common, but when I hear it's just African American men doing that, that's not true at all. In fact, I'm always in Brazil. I was there recently, several months ago, and the numbers of black men going to Brazil are just so small. They're so, finite.
Well, I just think it's men, not have nothing to do with color in actuality.
Yeah, it's more of a males, because when you go to Brazil as much as someone like myself has, many times I'm on the plane, I'm the only African American male on that plane, and I've been to Brazil almost 100 times in this past 10-year period. At least 80 times. And then when I'm there, the majority of the men that you see internationally that visit there are, they're from someplace else. They're not from America. You see many, many Europeans. You see a lot of Asians there. I have a lot of Brazilian Asian friends there who both live there and who come to Brazil from all over, Asian countries. So we're the very small minority there, in terms of the men who come there, who may go there to meet Brazilian women or form relationships. For instance, the 8 guys in my group, the majority of them have either haven't got married or have ongoing relationships with the same Brazilian woman that they met the first time they have visited there. So It's a lot more than just the sex thing, and I know that your guests are not implying that, but that's the hot topic, so it's easy for people to kind of get stuck on that because it, you know, it does connect to a lot of other things that are taking place here with respect to the, you know, the relationship discussion of black men and black women. So I can see why that would be a big part of the discussion.
Well, I want to ask the question. First, let me identify the station. You're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul, and this is Topically Yours, and I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler. And my question now is, what do men want from African-American women? What is it that they want from us?
Our money.
From just recently doing the film and talking to black men, they want women who act like women, who understand.
And what does that mean?
Who understand you may be the boss at in the boardroom, but when you come home, you're my wife, and we have an equal partnership here. You don't bring that mentality home and start because you make a little bit more money than I do, so you look down upon me and treat me like one of the kids. Yeah, I'm the man of the house. I'm just whatever role. I'm not married, so whatever, you know. Roles you take in the household, but respect me as a man, not just based on the dollar amount that I may bring home into the household.
Well, what do you women have to say about that? Do you feel we self-sabotage, ladies?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Do we feel that women oftentimes self-sabotage in their relationships?
Well, you know, if you have baggage, which most of us do, sometimes you do bring it, but that has nothing to do with color. And when it comes to black women, I had mentioned before us is about the education. But even when we have a man, he does not have to have a lot of money and equal to us education wise. But when they don't. A lot of times they have that I am the man mentality, and they like not helping, not pitching in, not helping financially. A lot of men don't want to help financially.
What are your thoughts on that, Jan? Because a lot of the times that women do feel that way, that you want us to be the chief cook and bottle washer, child raiser, and go out and get a job, and then... Mm-hmm. We're there, and there's so many in America with African American families. The woman is raising the family singularly,
even while she's married, if she's by herself.
Well, that's exactly the kind of household that I was brought up in. Yes, my mother was there, but my grandmother was head of household before her, and all of my aunts. Turns out, yes, they had husbands, but basically, they had to be head of household. Mm-hmm. The men were treated. In a loving way. I mean, I saw my aunts and my grandmother and my mother just catering to their men. But I just found out that a lot of times that's not enough. It seems that a lot of guys want you to just be completely submissive. And, I mean, if that's the case, it turns out that, you know, you have no backbone, you have nothing. And many times you are left with the responsibility of being head of household, and then you don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And when
exactly.
I say,
do you feel that women lose themselves when they have to just be catering to somebody else, and what's left
all
for them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no problem. You know, I mean, you know, with men being head of household, and when I say head of household, well, yeah, you know, when they are, if they're the king, I can be the queen. It's no problem. But I do think that there are many times when women are just not feeling that, you know, that they are worthy. They don't feel beautiful. They don't feel, you know, catered to. They don't, I mean, because I think we all can stand that. I mean, you know, our spirit, everybody's spirit needs to be stroked.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're not getting that, then you begin to feel less than. And not comparing it with anything other than, you know, just how you feel, you know, inside yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I'm glad you said that, because a lot of men, black men, miss the fact that women, all women, we're not the confident species. Women lack confidence in many areas,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times men trample on that instead of when we say we need to be cherished. We need to feel that you love us, and we don't get that. women would be happy to return it, but we're not getting what we need to
right,
keep a relationship going.
I do hear a lot
going.
Of times women are saying that we don't feel loved.
Right, but I just wanted to say real quick that I grew up in a household with a mother and father, both, but my father worked all the time, and they raised the boys. My brothers was raised very differently from me and my sister, where they did nothing. They don't know how to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And all they had to do was take out the garbage, and that's a problem too when you don't teach males.
That's
when
true.
You don't teach males how to be responsible, but you teach it to the girls.
Yes. Well, I'd like to ask the men on the panel, why is it that so many African-American women are raising their children alone? Where are you guys?
Well, I don't know who they're choosing to be their mate, and I think a big part of the problem is they tend to start their have kids before they get married, and you start your family, and then you wind up, you see what this kind of person this guy is. He's irresponsible. He's not this. He's not that. And I think you should find that out ahead of time before you start making families, before you start your family with an individual and making poor decisions on who your mate is and what criteria you're basing that on, whether he looked good, he's 6'3", he got six-pack, or whatever the case may be. But you really need to find out the character of an individual. And a lot, you know, I hear women on this side of their argument, and I hear men on this side of the argument, you know, especially with the money, and they come home and they want to be aggressive at home, and I like a feminine woman. I like a woman who, you know, likes to wear panties, not boxer shorts. And know their sort of role in this relationship. And you find it difficult, especially when women make a little bit more money than you, and you come home and, you know, I hear women, I got to wash the dishes and cook and clean. You know, men got to cut the grass, change the oil, rotate the tires, and clean out the gutters and do the painting and other stuff in the household. So that kind of balances out a little bit, in my opinion. But I think, you know, you got to make better choices, better decisions than who you dating and who you're looking for.
Well, the men that we find are the ones that we meet in college. So, you know, we're thinking that we are finding our equal.
Well, you know what? A lot of times I did a study. Most when white women go to college, they're looking for husbands. When black women in college, they're in college with the mindset, I'm getting my, I don't need a man. I don't need a man. I'm getting my degrees and this and
not
that.
Not necessarily.
That is, I'm just shocked. Because women, I have a lot of white, I have friends of all walks. When we talk about men, we all say the same thing. We all want the same thing. We may have been raised a little differently, but women are women. It really don't matter, really, the color. But it seems like we just get the short end of the stick. I don't know why. And how men think of us, is, I don't know if this perception of the evil black woman, you know, all she wants to do is fight, and all she's looking for is money, you know. I don't get that. And then I see women, Asian women, white women, you know, you don't have a problem with them at all. They can act the same way we act, but it comes across different for you. What is that? I don't know.
It is submissive,
Kendra.
Yes.
This is Sharif. Just one observation, and we're still talking about Brazil.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. In many of my conversations with Brazilian women over the years, they are very curious about African American women, how African American women think, and the relationship that African American women have with black men. I always get asked this question, and that is, it's usually, you know, one of two questions. What they usually ask, what's going on with black women in America? Or they'll ask, what is the problem with black women in America? And they ask that question in the context of why are black men coming to Brazil for relationships when black women have so much in America, when they have all the trappings of success, education, career,
education,
material things, and what I invariably, what I normally wound up, how I wind up answering the question is, I say that the problem with black women in America is America. It's the same problem.
Yeah, men, I agree.
Right, it's the same problem that black men in America have, is that that is America. America has done a lot of damage to us on both sides.
That's right.
And so I used to be one of those men who would say, yeah, you know, black women, boy, boy, some of them is, you know, really mean, got attitudes and all that. I understand that to an extent, but I also look at the bigger picture, the bigger cultural imposition of everything from slavery to systemic slavery to psychological slavery, economic slavery that is imposed on, you know, black people in America. You know, we still live in a very, very racist society. I don't care how much progress we've made.
Right.
I don't care how many black presidents we can elect, you know, in the future.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a bigger issue here.
Mm-hmm.
There are bigger forces working on us in America.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
part of what has to happen with blacks with respect to our relationships is that we just need to continue the conversation and the help toward each other to kind of heal a lot of the wounds that have been inflicted upon us, which have nothing to do with us, you know, our relationships, but everything else to do with what how we're under attack constantly.
Well, do you think the black race is in need of a psychiatrist? Because after all, we're carrying on that slave
mentality.
We need
to go home.
You think that would help?
No,
oh,
because
I,
the Africans don't even accept us now. As
exactly.
Africans.
No, but I agree.
Yeah,
with
but
that point.
But yes, we need to go home. They don't. The thing is, you're saying black, they don't accept us. They don't know us.
Right.
You know, it's like going home. You have to make yourself known, saying I'm back. You know, this is you're my family. And the only way we're going to get respect is to go back home. And I think I just feel that that should be coming sometime soon when we wake up and say, let's finish up what Marcus Garvey started. Because we see it, I see it, I'm sure other people see it, that it don't matter what we do here is never good enough and is never going to be good enough.
Exactly.
It's never going to be right. And so so we need to go back home.
Let me comment on that also. I agree with that. One of the things about when we're talking about Brazil, one of the biggest reasons why black men go to Brazil is not because of having cheap sex with beautiful women. That is not the reason. As a black man, when you go to a country like Brazil, for some reason, Brazilians just have this natural attraction to America and to black America in particular. Give you an example. On my last trip to Brazil, I met a white guy, a young white guy, who opened a bar and lounge in Ipanema. Beautiful little, you know, beautiful area, tourist area, ritzy area.
Mm-hmm.
And I had sat down with him in his lounge and had a conversation with him about business investment in Brazil. He knew that I had some interest there, and, you know, I was introduced to him by another friend, an African-American male from California who lives in Brazil. Anyway, the guy's name is Tom, and I write about him in the book. And in this conversation with Tom, Tom says, you know, Sharif, there are so many things here in Brazil that Americans can really benefit from in terms of cross-cultural relationships, in terms of investment, business, just everything. And he said, you know, we need more Americans over here, you know, all Americans. We need more black Americans, white Americans. And he said this. He said, one of the reasons why I left America, because he had been living there a few years, he said, one of the reasons why I left America was because of the racism. And he said, and what I found here in Brazil is that the Americans who come here, whether they're white, black, Asian, you know, Latino, whatever, they all work together here in this culture. And the last thing he asked was, why can't it be that way in America. Now, this is a white guy talking about racism and all the other, and the reason why he left America, you know, when he did years ago. So, you know, there's just so many other things going on here with respect to just, you know, the conversation as to, you know, why we go there. It's a cultural, there's some cultural reasons. There's some political reasons. Yes, racism does exist in Brazil. I found that out over the years and visiting there, but I've had the majority of the experiences that I've had over there and have seen over there, particularly as it relates to any Americans and any foreigners that come to Brazil, is that it is a place where you can go to be yourself, not be judged, not have to deal with all of the types of levels of racism and even some of the other things that we deal with socially and psychologically here in America. You're free of that kind of thing in Brazil.
Is going to Dr. Nelly, is going to Brazil a lot of ways for the black man going home?
In some ways it is, and I'll tell you why. I had an experience once where I went to, this was during Carnival, the height of Carnival season one year, and I went to the Samba Drone in Brazil, and that is where all the Samba schools come through to the top. At the end of a Carnival, they have this competition where the top five Samba schools come through the Samba Drone, and they perform, and it's an all-night, overnight affair, and they have tens of thousands of marchers in these Samba schools. At one point during during the middle of the night, maybe about 3 o'clock in the morning, I remember someone mentioned about the music. Most of the music is African-centered music.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I remember the experience that I had where at one point, you know, late into the night, these groups were coming through and all of this African music was coming out of these Samba schools, and they were singing and they were African centered kinds of lyrics, and I felt that I was hearing Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, the music and the singing and everything just reverberated through me so intensely that I remember I started to cry. And when I started to cry, I could not stop crying. And I kept hearing Africa, the music, and the words, the lyrics. And the people around me, most of them were you know, black Brazilians. They were encouraging me by, as they, you know, okay, you made it one step closer to home, you know. And they were giving me encouragement, and they were saying, one of the guys at the end of the this is what you need to come to Brazil, because Brazil is very close to Africa. This is what one of the local Brazilian guys.
Well, what are the festivals like?
Some of the most exciting festive events you could ever attend. For instance, Brazil has some very big things coming up in the next couple of years. They'll be hosting the World Cup game. They will have the World Cup games in 2014. They will have the Olympics in 2016. I'll be there for both of those. There's some other things going on, but the festivities are very cultural. Very engaging, Brazilians love to have fun in that country that believes in it. You will hear the term a lot, love and peace, or peace and love. You know, the average Brazilian says that a lot. You'll hear that a lot as you go through the streets of Brazil, because they're all about people coming together, having a good time. They believe in the oneness of humanity. My experience has been a very, very positive one. That's why I keep going back. That's why I will, just like Doc Stanley, you know, I will eventually retire there. There are many international travelers, and a lot of Americans now starting to find Brazil and see it as a place for possible permanent residency. There are a lot of blacks going to Bahia, to Salvador Bahia, for cultural tours, there's a lot to discover in Brazil culturally, historically, and a lot of other ways that are connected to us in America and to Africa.
Now, you mentioned to me when we were talking about the Cobb article that he really just covered the areas that had to do with prostitution that he went
to.
Yes. Tell me about that.
Yeah, let me just comment on that very briefly. One of the reasons why I wrote the book, Rio in Retrospect, is because after hearing so much that came out of that article and then some others about, you know, why black men go to Brazil, I said, well, you know, that's not my experience. And in fact, it's not the experience of anyone that I've been involved with who goes to Brazil. So when I saw, you know, the excerpts from the article, one of the first things that I noticed, there were two things with the Carver article. Number one, he spent only a week in Rio de Janeiro. He didn't go to any place else. He didn't even go outside of Rio proper. Secondly, he went straight to what are called terminals. And those are the houses of prostitution. He went straight to the terminals. And when I saw that, I said, why would he go to terminals to find out, you know, why African-American men go to Brazil? Because that's not where, you know, African-American men go if they want to meet Brazilian women. If you want to meet a Brazilian woman, you go into the average store right in the community. You walk right down Avenida Atlantica. You can meet any Brazilian woman you want. And I'm not talking about working girls or the girls, quote-unquote, in the program, which is what it's called, the program. You want to meet Brazilian women, you go right on that beach, Copacabana Beach or Ipanema Beach, and you can meet any Brazilian woman you want from any social class, you know, in any profession, and they are very, very friendly, even if they don't speak English. Some of them do speak, but many of them don't speak English. Now, he said a few other things in the article that made me really understand that I suspect that the writer Cobb, he went there with an ulterior motive to find a story about sex, because when you go to Brazil, you only stay a week. You go straight to the terminals, and the terminals are basically places that the middle class Brazilian, local middle class Brazilian men, that's who go to terminals in Rio and other places in the country, Sao Paulo, and those. That's who go to terminals. Most of the tourists don't go to those terminals, because in those terminals you spend a lot of money on high-class call girls, and you spend $150 just to get in the door, and then you know spend whatever money you're going to spend on the girls. You don't have to do that when you go to Brazil. You know, the women are so friendly, you know. You can meet a Brazilian woman sitting in an outside cafe, which is how I met one of my friends who's a school teacher. She's an elementary school teacher. Her name is Simone. She's a school teacher. I met her sitting outside of a cafe. I was reading a book, and she was doing some writing, and we got to talking, and we became friends because we were both educators. So when I saw how Cobb approached this article and what his tactics were, I was really disappointed, because as you read through the article, he talks to all of these call girls in these terminals, and you find that he has not ventured out into the neighborhoods, the streets, the local hangouts. Not, as I said, not even the beach. If you go on the beach, you can find anything else you want about Brazil, about Brazilian society, Brazilian people. They are very friendly and forthcoming. They will talk to you about anything. He says, he makes a comment at one point where he says, I was in one of these bathhouses, and he said the bathhouse had over 100 women. I've never heard of that in all the years I've been going there. He made a comment about when you go to eat at a restaurant, the waiter will give you a menu, and then he'll flip open a pack of Viagra. That has never happened to me, and I've eaten in these restaurants hundreds of times in the years that I've been going, and everyone that I've traveled there with. Now, one last comment. He made a comment about a Brazilian call girl telling him, he says, well, I want to interview you. And the girl says to him, well, you can learn more about Brazil if you sleep with me than talking to me, than if you interview me. Now, I found that very offensive to all Brazilian women, because it made it look like all Brazilian women are in that situation, and this is what they do. That was so offensive for me, and I'm not even a Brazilian. I can only imagine what a Brazilian woman would feel to know that this is what American writers or an American writer has come to report on as the epitome of what, you know, Brazilian women and culture is all about.
If I can add on to what the brother's saying, when I first went there, and I told him I came back, and after being introduced to Professor Cobb's article, which is trash, I went back twice before I actually started filming. Before I started filming, and not just on that, he stayed on a equivalent to a city block of Club Help and Mia Pataca, the more hangout spots. I went to Niterói with the Lapa, went down to see the arts and came back and interviewed people, not just in Rio. You can go right to the Ipanema. So it was biased, and I didn't know. To me, he had a motive. I know Essence is not owned by blacks anymore. And what was his motive for him writing that? Essence.
Is it owned by Playboy now?
I'm not sure who owns it. It's not owned by blacks anymore. Blacks don't own it. And they cater to black women, and they pump that into the black community. And a lot of black women formulate their opinion. Black men go to, they're just looking for prostitutes, and that was it. And that is a bigger issue than that. Like, Brazil is more of a collective society, and when you go there, people just embrace you. They bring you in.
Exactly.
I've been invited to people, come stay at my house, and I cook dinner for you. Not just female, males that I've met. Oh, glad to meet you, brother. Come to my house. You can meet my wife and kids, and we'll cook dinner for you. And they open their doors up to you, and they don't have much. But whatever they have, they tend to share it, and it's more collective society. That's why I fell in love with it.
So let me ask you this. You speak of how the Brazilian women treat the African-American male. How would it be for African-American women that went to Brazil? How would the men treat them?
Let me answer that question. part of what I write about in the Rio in retrospect is the experience of the one female that went on the initial trip with us, and she's been there many, many other times over. I was very curious about that back in 2001 when we first went, how Brazilians will treat African-American women. And I'm glad that Doris took the trip with us. She had the time of her life. Doris works for the Department of Energy in D.C., and she spent the majority of that, the month-long trip that we took the very first time we went there. In fact, Doris was just like all the other guys in the group. When it was time for her to return back home, she was in tears, as we were when it was time for us to come back, because the people had opened their hearts out to her so much and gave her so much love. And she said, you know, this is probably one of the greatest trips and experiences that I've ever had in my life, because she had no idea what to expect when she got there. She had heard a lot of the same things that, you know, every other, you know, African-American woman hears about. You know, well, the men go over there and they cater to the men, and men go over there and spend money. But for her to personally have the same type of open, welcomed experience, total experience from the people, the culture, you know, the institutions there, that was significant for me in a lot of ways, and I think it was significant for our entire group to actually witness that. So it wasn't just about you know black men being sought after. It was about Brazilian people just opening their arms to whoever comes to Brazil.
Well, and let me dovetail on that. You know, I went there my first time, Doc Stanley, with Gloria Gaynor. Okay, you know, Gloria Gaynor's popularity is just unbelievable in Brazil. We went into a shopping mall one time, and they heard that Gloria was in the shopping mall. For the next 20 minutes, everything they played was Gloria Gaynor music. When we landed in São Paulo, Mr. Décio Couto Macho, junior international promoter, they wanted us to come to an affair, which was that Thursday. And Mr. Couto Macho said, gentlemen, we'd love to come, but you know the traffic is so bad here in Brazil. And, you know, Gloria's, you know, unfortunately, it's our opening night. They said, look, if Miss Gaynor can come, we'll send a helicopter to pick y'all up and bring her to the affair. Which reset. My first time, by the grace of God, I got a chance to go to 8 or 9. I was stunned that the people on the Amazon knew Gloria Gaynor, okay? Mm-hmm. And when I left, after the friendship that was given to me, the last words I heard from Mr. Komatsu, Stanley, you have a friend in Brazil, after being with the musicians, after going to Belém, after going to Manaus, Goiânia, you know, and these people, you know, not embracing me, that was a big thing that got me about these people. These people just took me in. As Mr. Simon said, Stanley, you're going to like Brazil. And it wasn't about going to cat houses. It was about the people. The people embracing you as an African-American, as an American. You feel like, you know, I remember what Cherie said. When we left Brazil that morning and they left, I was in tears. My family was leaving. I had been with these people for a month. They were my family. They were closer than friends. And the bond that continued, Chiquinho made me the best man at his wedding. Mr. Cotemacho still stays in contact. When he has a show, he flies me in. And you talk about the ladies, and surely what Cherie said, yeah, it had to be offensive for that man to perpetrate that sort of fraud, that these are the type of women that, as a young lady, the first young lady I met in Brazil was a school teacher, Silvana. Met her, school teacher, we went out to dinner, you know, she taught me about the etiquette, the class of the people. The next person I met was she worked in an internet store, an internet store, Rosalie, you know, just beautiful, respectful people. I remember going out with a young lady, and you talk about this nonsense. I went out with a young lady I met, we became friends, Josie, and we went to have, I said, let's go have something to eat. So she says, well, let's go up to the pizza place. So, no, this is all, let's go to East Pizza Place. She's looking at the wine list, and she's thinking about getting the bottle, and I noticed that she doesn't get the glass of wine, and that when the guy brings the guaraná, which is like their ginger ale, he brings two cans, she tells him to take one back, and we share the one can. And when we went back, I asked her, amor, por que você não bebe vino? She said, hey, 15 reais, mucho dinero, no necesito. Hey, you know, she wasn't going to let me spend 15 reais for a glass of wine. We didn't need two cans of guaraná when one of us, one can could have been good enough. She had her son one day, met her son. He said, hey, phone me. So phone me if I have some. I said, no problem. Hey, she said, no need to go to the restaurant. I'll make him a sandwich. You have Coca-Cola here. And, you know, it ain't about the dollar. You know, the people like you for you. And you just, you know, it's something that you have to like. It engulfs you. You know, you are appreciated. You're accepting. For this guy to go just to a nightclub, well, yeah, you go. If you go to a nightclub, there are going to be prostitutes. You go to a football game, there's football fans. So he went into one area, and then like the professor said, the magazine now is perpetrating the fraud because it's no longer an African-American founded magazine. So the mindsets and concepts come out there are fallacies. But as Cherie said, you know, these people have a way of getting into your heart because they're sincere. My first stay in Brazil, when I went to Fortaleza, which I love the most, I stayed at a hotel called Marina Park. I stayed there 3 or 4 days. When I left, they said, Stanley, Marina Park is your second home. And anytime I come to, I'm at the bus stop one day. The guy comes out. I see he's in his Marina Park uniform. Hey, Stanley, hey, I saw you on the way to work. He says, no, Stanley, where you going? He has the hotel limousine. He's driving me to where I had to go and told me, Stanley, if you want, I'll come back and pick you up. I said, no, you have to do that. But these are the kind of people there, and this is the kind of respect you get as a person and as an African-American and American. Can't touch it.
Well, let me ask you this.
You're with Gloria
Gaynor.
What
is the economics there? What the economics? Are there black Brazilians still in a state of poverty, or are they businessmen, and are they running businesses? Who's running most of the business there?
Most of the darker skinned Brazilians, they are still in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I write about that to some extent in retrospect. What has happened? What has been significant in recent years, and I've always been proud of this, is that the former president Lula da Silva, he was responsible during the, for, over the last, he had two terms of 4 years each. He was, you know, greatly responsible, his administration, for bringing something like 40 million Brazilians out of poverty in just the last 10 years. A lot of those Brazilians were, you know, the darker skinned Brazilians. Poverty is still a big problem in Brazil. However, Brazil is in a position economically to move from I think number eight or seven as the largest economic superpower in the world to number three in just the next five to ten years. That's what Brazil is projected, and they also project that a lot of the Brazilians who have been in poverty, there are some roughly another 20 million Brazilians that are in really abject poverty, and the goal is to move those Brazilians out of poverty also. They are on track to make for a better economic society for all Brazilians. As we conversely here in America, as we're like sliding downhill, Brazil is on the upswing in terms of pulling all of its people out of poverty.
Well, I'd also heard that one of the mayors had ended or trying to end the sex trade there too as well.
Oh yeah. It's funny because I talked to a number of people who. Some of the friends that I have that work in some of the tourist trades there in the hotels and on the beaches, and they say the internationally popular club that used to be open called Help. That club brought in a lot of international tourists, and it brought a lot of economic activity to the entire region of Rio de Janeiro. But they closed Help down. And it has impacted the economy there. Now, what they're putting in the place of Help is a international cultural center, an international Brazilian cultural center, which is a beautiful structure, all glass structure. They should be halfway or almost finished the structure now, and they have updated pretty much everything along the coastline. In Rio de Janeiro, really for the purposes of these big sporting events that are coming to Brazil in the next couple of years. Brazil is probably going to be the one of the hottest economic spots in the world for investment, for opportunity, business opportunities, and investment and trade and everything else. I talk about that a little bit in the book, but there are a lot of opportunities there. Yes, racism still exists. I found more about the levels of racism as I've traveled, especially in the recent years. One of your guests made mention of Henry Louis Gates's book called Black in Latin America, and that's a must-read book. And he did the documentary on. I think there were six Latin American countries in that documentary. Mm-hmm. It was a PBS special. There are two DVDs. The first country he did it on was Brazil. Some very fascinating information to come out of that. So those are the kinds of things that we need to be, reading about. And if we're going to watch a DVD, that's the kind of DVD we need to watch. But can I switch over?
Can I just jump in for 1 second?
Yeah, is that Al?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I was just about to ask Deidre if she could get you, if you could make a comment on something.
Like you were saying about the economy changing, like I said, one of the greatest things that they're doing now is really putting money into the poor bank accounts and re-educating the poor. And having the poor come, giving them money to go to school and educate the poor to bring them up to standard to really take advantage of the economic boom that's coming there. To Brazil, and that also shows how they're a collective unit. It's all about the people there, and they all come together, and it's not as separate as it is here. We're not a collective society here in America, like you see over there in Brazil.
Well, if an African American wants to buy property there, how is that still inexpensive, or has it changed?
Well. Last time I was there, the dollar, the American dollar is a little bit higher than the real, but that is changing as their economy is growing. But you have a lot of American men that are buying property over there and that are investing over there and looking to take advantage of some of the events that's coming on there with the World Cup and the Olympics and everything that's changing there. So a lot of us are...
I'm sorry. I do really want to jump in there when you said that their collective country helping each other. The thing is, why at this time are they doing it? It should have always been there. So I don't get it at all.
Yeah,
they're behind.
There must be political
maybe
changes.
It's the wrong. Yes, but now. You know, the thing is that when you compare, when you talk about Brazilian women and black women and a lot of the statements that you made remind me of how people are down south. So
yeah.
I mean, this is the way we are. We do knock on each other's door and to get a butter. Sometimes things change when you're in this great metropolis, but when you go down south, we are who we are. And that's why a lot of black people are moving back down south also. There's a great migration.
It used to be like that.
But they're
going
back.
I lived in Atlanta.
Great migration back to the south.
I lived in Atlanta for about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first moved to Atlanta, you see everybody was coming in Chicago, mm-hmm. New York, and all the places. But it has over the years, it's not like that anymore. Atlanta used to be like that, but it's not like that anymore. As far as Brazil goes, I can only speak mm-hmm. on Brazil as far as when I've been going there for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, but I'm saying what I'm saying is you it's almost like you're saying whatever they're doing there is much more positive than what they're doing here. Where they are now, we've already done that. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, can I comment on that?
Yes.
In the early
okay.
years of visiting Brazil, I didn't see a lot of the racial issues and the racism. As I got more and more into, you know, different parts of Brazil and different neighborhoods and talk to the real Brazilian people away from all those tourist areas, then you start to get a better feel of what's really going on. But I have to echo this again. I have to recommend this again. That series on Black and Latin America, you need to watch that. You need to read that book because it really covers everything that we're talking about.
That's where I got my information.
Yes, very good detail. Now, what mm-hmm. I think has happened.
You got to get frustrated too.
I agree with the sister.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
You need to send everybody a copy of that.
I will.
Yeah.
I will. But you
what I think
is
happening.
No, I'm talking to Al Grease.
Yeah, I'll make sure I get your information. I'll make sure you guys get a copy of Frustrated.
Yeah.
Oh.
What I think is happening is that yes, Brazil is behind us. I think one of your guests said that earlier that Brazil is maybe 20, 30 years behind us, and that's
mm-hmm.
just a result of their society, and they're trying. They're working very hard to catch up. They recognize that across the board in terms of politics, economics, social life, and everything else, they need to step it up. Now, for that reason, Brazil, this is very interesting to me, Brazil has just recently, in just the last couple of years, instituted a system of affirmative action, you know, which is
mm-hmm.
like really, really interesting, really amazing. And in the documentary, Gates' documentary,
mm-hmm.
he goes into a college, one of the local colleges, I think at the University of Rio de Janeiro, and he interviews the students from a cross-section of Brazilian, lifestyles. And, you got the Brazilians who look European. You got the Brazilians that look, look like they're from the Caribbean, area, and then you got Brazilians that look African, and they talk about affirmative action, and they talk about the same issue that we were dealing with 30 and 40 years ago. They're
mm-hmm.
just getting there, and they are, and these are some hot topic issues, and they're tackling them, and they're approaching these issues from the standpoint that, okay, we know we had a horrendous history of slavery and class warfare, because a lot of this in Brazil is about class as much as it is race, economic class warfare. So they have been working very, very hard. In fact, that's one of the reasons why Lula was elected to two consecutive terms, because he was poor. He came out of the trade unions. He was a poor person. When he became president, his goal was to lift all Brazilians out of, you know, economic poverty. And he received a lot of attacks because he said, you know, we're all Brazilians. You know, I don't care what your color is. You know, we are all Brazilians. And, you know, we need to do this for all of us. Now, there's some he's been attacked from some circles during his administration who want to keep the status quo, just like we have, you know, what's going on over here. The status quo says.
Is it the same type of racism in Brazil as we face in America?
Some of it is.
Excuse me. Yeah.
And but Brazilians are faced with two types of isms. The racism is one piece that they are dealing with now. They're very, very serious about tackling, you know, the whole white-black Brazilian issue. But the other thing is the classism, the class of warfare that has gone on in Brazil for so long. For instance, when you go into the favelas, and I've been into many favelas. In fact, I had some scary moments.
What is a favela?
A favela.
It's like the projects there.
It's like the slums.
Oh.
The projects, yeah.
Oh.
And when you go into some of these favelas, they you see, and they surround all of the wealthy areas in all of Brazil. You can go to the wealthiest areas, tourist areas, and right next to those areas, like Lapa and Ipanema, where the wealthiest Brazilians live, right next to them are the favelas. And in those favelas, you have all colors of Brazilians that are poor. White Brazilian, you see all those poor white Brazilian children, brown Brazilian children, black Brazilian children. And, you know, so you see, and that's, again, that's more class. A lot of those people will be denied simply because of their class status, not so much because of their color. Now, out when you go into other parts of the country, in north and western Brazil, you see a lot more. They're dealing with a lot more of, you know, where the indigenous Brazilians, the dark-skinned Brazilians, are having to, they're just starting to have their say of the piece of the government pie, you know, in Brazil after many, many years. But when you look at the total history of Brazil, and remember, Brazil was the last country in the Western Hemisphere to abolish slavery, and they had some horrendous our slavery was lightweight compared to the slave trade in Brazil. The Portuguese, for instance, whenever a slave got doing the Portuguese slave trade, instead of letting them, you know, nursing them back to hell, they would just throw them to the side of the road and just get another slave. We're here,
right.
You know, it's a little bit different. So we had a little bit better. Not that slavery is by any means, you know, a good thing, and never has been. But the Brazilians had it the worst. They had it the longest. It was the most horrendous. So, you know, in understanding that history, I could see why it's taken them longer. You know, they're 20, 25, 30 years behind us in terms of all.
Well,
I
have to ask very quickly because we're coming to the end of our show. And I'll bring it back to America very quickly. You guys spoke about what African American men don't like in their women. What do you love in your women?
Everything.
I'm sorry.
Everything.
What do I love? What do I love about women?
African American women.
What do I love about them?
Yes.
Everything.
That's not an answer.
Hey.
Be specific.
Well, I can tell you this. And going to Brazil, I live in New York, so you get a mixture of everybody here too. You know, and in my travels, black women are the most beautiful women. I don't care where you go on the planet. If there's black women there, they're beautiful. They're beautiful. And it's not so much what I like about them, it's more that I see the differences in us now, especially when it comes to that whole financial issue. You know, I don't struggle a little bit because I'm doing film.
No,
and
but I'm not. We talked about that. I'm asking you, what do you love about you?
Her beauty, her strength, and the fact that if she's in your corner, as Dave Winfield said, she's the best friend in the world you have.
But she's not. And she's not. That's one of the worst.
You in trouble.
What a planet.
But you keep bringing it back to the negative. I keep trying to get a positive.
No, I love a beauty. I love a beauty.
I love her strength. I love her friendship. I love her way of being as a woman. I mean, she's the most beautiful woman in the world. And you know, like I said, hey, black is beautiful, the most beautiful.
Well, we have such a great divide now. I want to end the show with, anybody got solutions how we can? I hope this conversation has helped us in some way, but it's a long road to hoe.
I have a solution.
Go back to Africa.
That's right. Let's go back.
my solution would be the family. Concentrate more on the family unit.
Excellent.
We need to put more focus on the family and go back to some of the advice from our elders in our family. A lot of times I see people start family, you don't get introduced to the other side of the family until marriages. You know, you don't really get to come together before all that happens, and you bring kids into the picture and everything. So I think we need to strengthen our family. Mm-hmm. Family unit and become more collective in the family unit.
Mm-hmm. I want everybody to tell me what you think is a solution. We said family, we said go back to Africa.
I always say prayer. You know, go to the master. That always works.
Well, I think if we interact more, I think that we really need, we have just become so separated. I guess for the purpose of survival, it would really help if we could just reach out to each other more.
Yeah, we don't have that beauty and unison that we had back in the 60s on the
Absolutely
Black Power Movement.
Absolutely not.
But,
it's not,
you know,
there.
I mean, every brother loved a sister. I mean, you wanted a sister on your arm. You know, your brother was your brother. That was a great time, a unique time.
Right.
It was sort of a renaissance. And that's the kind of mindset we got to get back to. God first and family and friends second. The great line by Gail Sayers, God is first, my family and friends second, I'm third. And I think that is, I don't know what happened, but we got to go back to that mentality we had in the 60s.
Yeah.
I agree.
It would definitely help because I'd like to see us just interact more. I find these days that it's very difficult to even get someone to say hello to you.
Oh,
there was a
time
that we would speak to each other, whether we knew each other or not.
Yes.
We'd see someone, and if they're the same color you are and you know they're of your race, you say hello.
Yeah, wow.
And you interact, and that is not happening.
Yeah.
I see that. I still see that all the time. I'm in Harlem a lot.
Okay.
It's still there.
All right. Well, I know it's happening in the South, but it's not happening so much here because I live in
Harlem,
an area.
Harlem,
I don't live in Harlem, but I'm up there a lot.
I
think we have to stop looking at each other
in Harlem.
We have to stop looking at ourselves just as individuals. I said we have to just stop looking at ourselves as individuals and look at ourselves as belonging to something greater than ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, with technologies that everybody got their iPods in their ears and nobody's interacting with one another. And we just see ourselves as individuals. It's me.
Mm-hmm.
And I cloned it, the me generation. It's all about me. That's it.
That's true.
We have to come back to we and the whole.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and if you get a copy of Frustrated documentary, it talks about all that good stuff.
Well, I'm going to have to end the show with a little bit of love and a lot of love for everyone that came on the show. I thank you.
Thank you.
Parker, Sharice Bailey, and Sharon Harris. And I want to thank my listening audience. I know that some of you couldn't call in because I'm not used to having so many guests, so I guess there was no spot for you to call in. But I saw there was lots of you in the chat room, and so thank you for being there. And this is the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul, and I'm Deirdre Schuler, thanking my audience for making my topic topically yours. And we're going to end the show with a Brazilian song, Samba de Uma Noto Sol. And here we go. Good night, all. Thank you all again.
Bye.
Bye.
evil take.